Welcome to Amazon Legends, where we have real stories about making it big on Amazon. Our guests are CEOs of large companies and entrepreneurs who became power sellers. Also providers specializing in helping sellers, aggregators that acquire sellers, and former Amazonians will give us an insight from behind the scenes. Here is your host, Nick Urison.
Welcome to another episode of Amazon Legends. My next guest today is a retired officer from the Marines. He then got into social media after retirement, and that led him to becoming an influencer. And you got to give it to these Marines. They always go after the unknown, and then they nail it down, and then there's no getting away from it. So that's exactly what he's done. And today he's the president and chief operating officer of Fusion Marketing, which is an Amazon influencer. And when he's not working, he likes to watch college football, listen to alternative rock from the 80s, and he's enjoying his first grandson while he's traveling. So with that, everybody, meet my guest, Jim Fuse. Welcome to the show, Jim.
Great to be here, Nick. Thanks for having me.
Oh, it's a pleasure to have you. And I want to start by saying thank you for your service, of course, and also a hell of a service in the Marines. So I'm sure you have a lot of stories, but let's start with your expertise area. So today, everybody listening, you want to stay with Jim throughout the episode, because we're going to talk all about working with influencers. So Jim, give us the outline of what an Amazon seller who's looking to bring in influencers to build their brand should be looking out for. Give us the bullet points of approach.
Yeah, I think one of the biggest, I'll call it mistakes sometimes, I think that people automatically think is it's like, oh, I'm looking for that popularity contest. I want to get this person that's got, you know, hundreds of thousands or millions of followers. And I think it's really more about finding, we'll call them, you know, the nano and the micro influencers, the people that have a much smaller amount of influencers, because they really have built more of that, as Pat Flynn would say, that those super fans, those people that, you know, have built that know, like, and trust with them. So look for people that are actually using your product. Don't just think, oh, I'm going to take this widget and find somebody because they got a lot of people, because you really want someone that's already got that buy-in, that they'd sell your product even if you didn't pay them for it, because they really like what your product does. And so I think that's part of the mistake that these influencer agencies make, or these sellers make, is they're like, oh, well, this person's got all these followers, so we'll just make a deal with them. And then really both parties end up being disappointed later because they didn't get the results they wanted. Because I think sometimes the influencer is looking at it more from a monetary gain standpoint. And that's actually what the seller was looking for, right? The seller was looking for someone that was going to generate sales. And we'll talk a bit more about that mindset too. But I think that's the thing, right? Look for those people. You can find them on social media that are already maybe talking about your product. They're doing videos about your product. Go and search your product on YouTube and see, maybe you've got people out there that are doing unboxing and reviews, you know, and telling people what they really think, because they're doing it because they want people to be informed and be able to make good decisions.
Yeah, I mean, this is, you touched on something which kind of got me thinking about the mindset. So I guess the subject of this particular conversation is about picking the right influencer. Who is the right influencer for you? And what I've heard you say is someone who's going to actually use your product. So someone who has the passion for using your product. So for example, my favorite example is a woman entrepreneur who created a baby product, who has another woman influencer using that baby product, who happens to be a mother herself. So that obviously is the chemistry for the product, so to speak. So, and the other thing that got me thinking is these influencers that have millions of followers. So if you think about it, their followers are their capital, right? Mm-hmm. So they want to get the highest return on their capital as many times as possible. because it's the same capital that is going to keep giving. So there really is not much of an incentive for them to spend so much time with your product, because there's plenty of others, lining up because of their follower base. And so therefore they're going to give you a shot and then move on to the next guy and the next guy. So in that sense, it's kind of a shame because they built that following. Now they're cashing in on it, but without really doing much, giving it the due attention, so to speak. So therefore, as you were talking, I thought, wait a minute, this is like their capital. So, you are better off you working with someone who has a smaller audience, but who's going to put the blood and sweat, so to speak, in advocating for your product, right? So that's what you are talking about.
Oh, definitely, definitely. I mean, I think that's part of the whole issue is really that when we, and it gets a bad, the whole term, even influencer marketing, sometimes just sounds like, oh, it's kind of icky, but it really is. We're all influencers, right? This podcast influences people to make decisions about ways they're going to use Amazon in their business or how they're going to grow their business. I mean, so whether you even realize it, which I'm sure you do, Nick, you're an influencer in your own way. We're all influencers. We influence our children, we influence our friends by the actions we take. And so if we're complaining about a product and we tell somebody, about how bad it was, they're likely not going to use it. It's the same thing when we refer a business to someone. If they, have good experience, they're going to trust you. If they have a bad experience, they're going to come back to you and say, hey, that person you told me to do this job was really didn't do a good job for me. And then you're in the future going to say, wow, I really got to be careful about who I vet. And so it's no different in an influencer marketing. If you're going to work with an influencer as a seller, you got to do your homework and make sure that these people are going to be a good fit for you. And so that even goes into, potentially like, what kind of things are they saying on social media, right? Are they getting political? Are they going to do something that may fall back on you, right? We've heard of these companies that have had some issues because they had some influencer that did something, and then they're like, oh, we got to cut ties with this person because, one of the first things you say, like, oh, well, they're working with company X, Y, and Z. So I think that too can be the danger of having these large influencers, not to mention, like you said, because they're looking to cash in for some of these smaller sellers. They may not be in your budget, and so you really got to look at that trade-off. So I like your idea of, right, start out with the smaller, that what we call the nano micro influencers that still have, a few thousand followers, but they are looking to grow, as opposed to like thinking, oh, I've got to get this top person if I'm going to have any success.
Yeah. So I like numbers. So when you say nano and micro, what should a seller be looking for in terms of number of followers there for the influencer to work with?
Yeah. So I know, as an example, to become an Amazon influencer, you have to have, and they don't tell us the exact numbers, but I'll just throw out the number 2,000 followers on one of now four platforms that they've changed it. They used to be Twitter, now known as X, but they're looking at your Instagram, your Facebook business, TikTok, or YouTube. And obviously, depending on the platform, some are much harder to get than others. But you want to look for, are they creating content? Are they getting engagement? When you start to get to people that are at about 10,000 followers, on some of these platforms, obviously you're going to get a lot of, bang for your buck. And so, like, when we got into the Amazon space, I had, about 10,000 followers on Twitter. So that was kind of like where I was, I guess you could say, garnered my influence. But, they're not looking at LinkedIn, but, if you're a business that has a product that wants to do products with businesses, maybe you want to see, like, hey, is this person active on LinkedIn? Because maybe they're going to help connect you with some of those businesses that could help your product as well. And so you don't want to just focus on one thing. Where does your audience hang out?
So the other thing that so you mentioned followers, so about 2,000 and up, and it should be on any one of the four social media platforms. I also heard you mention engagement. So someone with engagement is who you're looking for, right? Someone who just has followers, but there's no engagement,
Yes.
versus those with engagement. They matter a lot more, right?
Oh, definitely. Because you will see people grow. I've know some YouTubers that have grown their channel by engaging with people, not by necessarily creating a ton of content, but actually engaging with meaning, right? Encouraging people, telling people how things work. I mean, when we post our videos on YouTube of products that are on Amazon, we're answering people's questions. And so that can be the challenge on Amazon, other than the general Q&A at the bottom of a product page, which is not something that we have control over. Really, that becomes the manufacturer. But wouldn't you much rather have, if you want to call it that influencer, answering people's questions openly in a sense, and not even being controlled by, in a sense, by that, third party, by Amazon saying, oh, well, you can't say this or that. And that becomes part of the challenge. So, and Amazon wants that off-site traffic. And so I think that's where it's important as a seller to realize it's not just about being on Amazon because you're being challenged by where is your product rank, things of that nature. So where are those other channels or people are going to learn about your product aside from your own channel that people are going to like, oh, wow, Nick really knows a lot about microphones. I need to follow him on YouTube and learn about these microphones from him, and then I can make that purchase decision.
Yeah, I mean, those comments are extremely valuable under each video, people asking questions, and then you provide links and everything else. So that's the kind of stuff you're looking for. So bottom line, you want influencers who have engagements with their audience rather than just a large number of followers. All right, cool. So let's move on to the next one. So where do you find these influencers? Where is the best place to go?
Believe it or not, there's a really couple good Facebook groups that I have a lot of other influencers that I've gotten to know through there. And I think even by connecting into that community, like if you came to me looking for someone specific in a specific niche, at least me, I can't speak for others, I'm going to help find that person for you as opposed to say, oh, I can do it, right? Because if it's a product or service that doesn't fit my niche, I would rather help you find someone that's going to make you successful, because I think it's that whole thing of, if we help others, it comes back in spades. So I know that the best one I'm aware of is there's a couple of Facebook groups for Amazon that, you just search, I think, Amazon influencers, you'll find some of them. And then I think Amazon does have a list of some influencers. But I'm not really sure what the criteria is they use for that. And I know there's been a lot of changes in the Amazon influencer, if we'll call it a team, where they have a lot of turnover. So that's where I think sometimes getting connected to influencers is a better way to do it. And finding them, like I said, Facebook's been a pretty good place. There's definitely some groups out there that are influencer specific.
Can you share with us some of the specifics of the Facebook groups that you like?
I should have thought of that before. Look it up real quick while we're on
Yeah.
here.
When I look for groups, usually I look at how many people there are in the group, but that's not necessarily always the best, right? Because you get
Right.
lost, and some of those people may not be interacting or may not even be checking. So it always helps to have the right group.
Yeah. Monty Weaver is a gentleman that runs a great group of influencers, and that's what me and Chris had learned about. He runs this group that I'm trying to remember the name of it, but they do a weekly Zoom meeting where they have all the different folks, talk and chat about what's going on in the community and how things are changing, because there's constant change going
Sure.
on with Amazon, whether it's they've come up with these what they call creator connections, where brands are able to kind of offer up, like they have a budget, if you want to almost call it like a bonus, of those sort of things. I'll get you the name of those groups if you want to maybe put those in the show notes, because I want to make sure
Yeah,
we're able to get through this.
so we'll include those in the show notes so anybody can tap into those. Okay, so you are suggesting basically look for these groups that will provide. How about there's also these agencies, so to speak, and what is your take on those?
I've stayed away from the agencies. I tend to find that they don't necessarily understand, at least in my case, what my brand does. And I think sometimes they're looking for, certain types of people. I think they get caught up in the numbers sometimes more as opposed to like saying, hey, this is a really good, company, a really good influencer. We like their content. What we've tend to find has happened with us specifically because you have got your Amazon influencer shop page is we have companies emailing us like all the time, like, hey, we've seen your content or they see it on YouTube, we'd like to offer you these products to work with. So it's been more of we're getting a lot of inbound traffic as opposed to having to go find an agency. Or it's as simple as if you really like a product, you're doing content for the product, I think you approach them, right? You just go and search out for them. So I mean, if you want to flip it around, if you're a seller and you see somebody doing good stuff, approach them. So I've stayed away from the influencer agencies. I know they do work for some people and they definitely have some horsepower, but for us personally, we've stayed away from agencies.
And you just mentioned something, shop page as an influencer.
Yes.
So first of all, share your URL with us so people can
We
get an
actually
idea.
use a redirect to make it really easy. You just go to dealcasters.shop, and that takes you to our storefront on Amazon. And we've chosen the redirects because I think, as we talked about before, if you put Dealcasters into Google, I think we're like the first 4 or 5 pages just by creating that redirect. It's not like that we have this, great website that's SEO rich, but by using that URL, and we also use dealcasters.live to take you to our most recent interviews. It's definitely helped us as far as search goes.
So, is it possible to find a list of similar pages by influencers on Amazon? Is there like a directory or is there a way to
There
find those?
really isn't. That's actually part of the challenge, I think, because a lot of times, if you talk to someone and you tell them that you're an Amazon influencer, you kind of get that dog look, like what? That's a thing? Or if you tell them you do a live show on Amazon, you're like, and it's not Prime, it's actually on Amazon.com. People don't know that it exists. So that's been one of those challenges as well of getting that information out to people. It kind of goes back to you start to like, create your own spreadsheet of people so that if somebody asks, like, well, here's their shop page or here's their YouTube channel or other things, but there's not, unfortunately, at this point in time, a central repository of all those places for sellers to go look, which I think would be helpful for everybody.
And this shop page is the same as any other seller, or is it
Yes.
a different page? It
It
is, right?
it's similar in some aspects. What they allow us to do is they allow us to upload what they call shoppable videos, which are where we're doing a video talking about the products that are sold on Amazon. We are able to do idea list, which is like a collection of different things that we maybe, put together. Like, here's my live streaming kit list, which might have 9 or 10 products that are all related to how to do live streaming. And then we can also do what's called shoppable photos, where you can just take a photo and put a little bit of a description of what's going on in the photo and tag the products in the photo. So those are kind of the three types of content. And then they've started we'll call it a TikTok-like, I don't know if you want to call it a product, but it's called Inspire. And they're looking for vertical video content that, same thing, they'd like it to be a minute or less. You tag your products. But the challenge with that and the challenge with the other stuff is Amazon controls what gets fed into the feed. So even though an influencer may put the video out there and it's been approved, doesn't mean it's going to make it into the rotation on Amazon for shoppers to see. And so that's why it's so important to take that same content and repurpose it to other platforms to drive people back to Amazon for those sellers.
This is actually a good segue to the next discussion point, which is the content strategy, right? So what should be the right content strategy?
I think it's definitely the content one needs to educate people. And, you know, this is something, you know, that we had a discussion about as well, is solving people's problems. It's not about selling your product and look what a great deal I have. How is your product solving my problem? Where we find a lot of our content ideas is at the bottom of the product page. Guess what? These people are asking questions, right? They get upvoted, right? So right there is your content. How does this, you know, what's the size of this? All these different things. It's like, okay, now I can create content that's going to answer people's questions, and it lets them know if their problem's being solved or not being solved by that product. That's where I think, you know, sometimes the emphasis on sales, it's like people will buy things if it solves their problem, right? They're not going to buy it just because it's, you know, got the best price. And because you have the challenge of ad spend on Amazon potentially, you know, squelching your product, or you have to spend a lot of ad dollars to get it up there in ranking. And I know how important ranking is. What can you do to get more eyes on that? And for us, it's creating the content that, you know, solve, you know, what problem are we solving with this product? We'll talk about, as an example, you know, Shure, which is one of the companies that we work with, microphone company, came out with a new product that allows you to put it right into your computer as with USB and hook up any XLR microphone to it. So we did some videos like, hey, here's a way to have an interface into your computer without having to spend, you know, hundreds and hundreds of dollars and still use some of the best microphones. So we look at it from that perspective. And so as a brand or a seller, what problem does your product solve? Mm-hmm. That's where I think that the content strategy needs to revolve around that. And the people are telling you what their questions are. And we've talked about this as well before. YouTube is the second biggest search engine, and that's where people usually go to find answers to their problems. So I think the strategy of taking that same content that can go on Amazon and putting it on YouTube is a great way to drive traffic to Amazon as well.
Well, I mean, I just heard a great strategy. I mean, you mention it and then you move on in a very subtle way. No, but it's so powerful that your content is in the questions that people are asking. So really, if you compile a list of those questions, and then, you know, some of those questions are repeats, just asked in a different way, but compile a list of unique questions that people want to know the answer to. And then you create a video for each one of those questions, short videos. I mean, that's a huge impact in terms of establishing your value. Because if anybody is going to write you a check, it's not because it's such a great deal. Mm-hmm. Until you establish the value of what you are offering. So, and these videos will help you establish the value of your products by addressing a specific need that somebody was expressing. And it makes it not only relevant, but also authentic. So people know there is, you know, I'm doing a program totally unrelated. It's a B2B program. And the speaker said, you know, he said, what I do is I ask the audience to describe the problem they have. And then he says, I take those words and then write a blog article or create a short video. He says, because if I was to write something or talk about it myself without hearing from them, I would be using my words. And what I want is I want to use their words And when I use their words, then they connect with what I'm talking about. So that's what you are getting at. And this is very powerful to use those questions. The other thing that I heard you is have them record the videos and then you distribute it across your own channels, not only theirs, right? So talk about that a little bit more because it's very subtle.
Yes. So as an example, we did a Roku video where, we're unboxing it, talking about how to set it up, put that video on Amazon, taking that same exact video, putting it on YouTube, right? We've had 20,000 plus views of that video, of one video, right? And it's just explaining how to set up a Roku. And what's funny is I think people think we work for Roku. We actually have no relationship with them. We just it falls into our lane of being about tech and helping people solve their problem of how do I watch TV streaming if I don't want to use my television set. And so that's where you start to see the power, going back to what you talked about, of creating that video where the title is right, going back to that question, and we're answering it, and you don't necessarily have that same capability at this point in time. On Amazon, they let you put a title of your video that's maybe about 60 characters, but there's no description. And so we also, that's where thumbnails are important, right? The thumbnail, kind of same thing, allows you to create that this is what this video is about. So think about using that thumbnail as a way to let people know what the question is that you're answering in that video, even as a seller, or having your influencers do those sort of videos for you.
Yeah, I mean, you just touched something else that's very important. And I know this personally from my own experience with our channel, where if you just put up a thumbnail, or let's step back, you upload the video, right? And then it immediately picks up an image to be used as thumbnail. 9 out of 10, you don't want to do anything with it. You just let it go because it's good enough. Well, no, it's not, because thumbnail is what comes up in the search together with the title. And guess what? People are not reading, they're looking at the pictures first.
Right.
So therefore, your picture, which is the thumbnail, has to be about what that video is about. So what I found is, first of all, make it as lively as possible, like show some kind of a movement in that thumbnail. And the other thing is, put some symbols of what the subject is about. Like, for example, let's say you're talking about, I don't know, shopping cart or shopping experience or whatever. Put a picture of a shopping cart. Or if you're talking about a hair dryer, put not necessarily yours, but something symbolic so that you have the title. They're going to see that. And if they're looking for a hair dryer, they're going to see the hair dryer in the thumbnail. They're going to gravitate towards it, and then they're going to read the title. And then if your title is about how to pick the best hair dryer, for people with dark hair, it's now suddenly it makes it relevant. So this thumbnail and the title, they are so key, right? So can you give us some tips around that?
No, I think you're absolutely right. I think it is about, and also testing, right? Try different thumbnails. Maybe that you put a thumbnail out, you're not seeing a lot of action. I mean, think about doing like think of it even sometimes as what we call a long tail keyword searches, right? Maybe that's the title. Think of using some of that Q&A as maybe the title on your thumbnail. And to your point, right? Make it colorful, make it kind of pop at people, because what we see happen sometimes, and I find it humorous myself, is you have these people that think that because every video on Amazon says that the person that did this video earns a commission, they're an influencer. But the people will say, well, I'm not going to put a thumbnail on it because I want it to look raw, and I want people to think that I'm just a regular person. Well, we're all regular people to begin with, but it's like, I'm not going to sit there and look, to your point, at an image and think that, well, this is going to answer my question. But when I see that thumbnail, now you, like you said, you've already caught my attention. Thumbnail catches it first, title catches it second. So I think that becomes the important thing. Now, one of the things that we have done is we use a product, and some of the sellers I'm sure are familiar with, called Helium 10. Mm-hmm. And it will tell you what the search terms people are using to find certain products, like what's the most popular, you know, search term for, and sometimes you're like, wow, I wouldn't have thought of that, right? Like maybe sometimes your thumbnail is, and this is going to sound funny, is like why you want to use product X instead of Y, right? So you're doing a comparison. And so they maybe are looking for your competitor, but now because you've used the competitor's name and you're talking about your own product, you're going to get some of that traffic and you may actually get some people to switch over to your product. So you want to think, you know, I think sometimes I guess we'll call it a little bit outside of the box and not just do things the way things have always been done. And you know, and that's part of, I think, the military adapt and overcome mentality, that you got to figure out, all right, this isn't working. What are we going to do differently? Because I think that's the challenge in this industry, is things are constantly changing. They change the algorithm. How are we going to get in front of people? And I think that's what actually had Amazon create this program, was because of the fact that when they were going to these big name people, people were like, I'm not going to listen to this big name person to buy a product. But when they see people that are more like them, right? And that's kind of what usually happens when you build a community. It's people that have similar interests. That's where they started to see success. And I think Amazon's been very happy with the results.
Yeah. So let's talk a little bit also about tagging, because it's important to tag your videos right way. I'm, of course, referring to YouTube. So share with us some tips about what's the best way to tag.
Yeah, so I like to use a program called TubeBuddy. It's very helpful in that, you know, because one of the things you have to think about is whatever you put in your title in YouTube specifically needs to also be within the first 200 characters of your description. So that's kind of step one. Then step two is, and this is where TubeBuddy is helpful, it'll let you know what are the high-ranking tags and similar tags. Because sometimes, which seems crazy, even putting a misspelling in can be helpful, because people don't always know how to spell things. Like, I obviously had that problem with my business name because I have the H in there, and usually people are looking for just the S. So that's another thing. And then think of those categories, but you definitely want to get those tags in there. You know, you also maybe even tag the company, right, in the description, so they may find it if you're a, you know, and this is more for the influencer, but if you're a seller, you can add people's videos to your own channel and a playlist. I mean, you're not taking their video, but you're like, you know, maybe you want to create a playlist of, here's other people talking about our product, right? I do that where I've been interviewed on other people's channels, and I've got a playlist where I've been interviewed or things of that nature. So that's actually, and I just thought of that there's no reason that a brand couldn't create a playlist of, here's other people that are, you know, have reviewed our product that, you know, maybe there's not even a relationship there. But now all of a sudden, if your people are watching this other person's video, they're going to be thankful, like, wow, this brand liked my video and now I'm getting views. And so I think that's kind of a win-win for everybody.
As you know, Amazon often loses inventory or overcharges fees. With Arty, you can now recover up to 30% of your lost revenue at a monthly flat rate of only $99 with no commission fees. For unlimited reimbursements, you can increase your bottom line. Their automated Amazon-compliant process ensures hassle-free refunds. Visit www.getarty.com/legends and sign up today to get 1 month free and discover your recovery potential.
Yeah. I mean, you can also download YouTube videos, right? So you can download YouTube videos. You can repurpose them any way you like without obviously stepping on anybody's toes, especially if you are talking about it or somebody else is talking about your product. They're talking about your product. So producing the content is one thing and distribution is a whole different thing. So what I'm hearing from you is you need to really have a content strategy as far as what should be in the content, and your suggestion to me is a brilliant idea. Take the questions, make it the subject of the video, and then tagging, thumbnails, downloading, you know, repurposing playlists, that's a distribution strategy. So you need to have both. And then pursue, and then in the process, test, right? That's the key to figure out what is going to work the best.
Definitely.
Yeah. Okay. So the next subject is what everybody wants to figure out. And of course, there is no single solution. And it's how to pay these influencers. Because it's a sensitive subject. At the end of the day, that's how they make a living. And at the same time, it's a cost for you. You don't know what to expect. So there has to be a middle ground. So what's the best way to pay influencers and how to approach it?
I think there's a couple of different ways. And I think this is, like you said, where it becomes, if you want to call it, I don't know, touchy maybe is a good word, is when money gets involved, things change, right? And so, as an example, if you're expecting an influencer to sell things on Amazon, that's not completely within their control, because it goes back to what I said earlier. Amazon decides what videos show up on the product page. So even though they maybe made a great video, it never got seen. There were very few sales. And those sales could also be because of the product ranking. And so I think a couple ideas would be they do provide maybe a percentage, if you want to call it a commission, based on actual sales, maybe as a flat fee per video. And then you can also get into the terms of you create the content as the creator and you give up the rights to that to the company. You know, that's where I think sometimes we've tended to stay away from that because we want to own the content. But you could give me a unique product link that I can put off of Amazon that maybe is a direct sale to your website. You know, it's still really an affiliate model because, you know, Amazon, it's like 1-4% is the commission off for Amazon influencer sales, depending on what product and what category it's in. And so I think it's very easy for a seller to say, okay, well, what can we do to reward? And so maybe it's additional commission. Maybe it's a flat fee. But what's funny is you're going to have people that are kind of all over the map in what they expect. We've tended to just say, look, we want the product, because in some cases, these are not cheap products. And then in exchange for giving us the product, you know, no strings attached, in the sense that, you know, because in some cases, maybe we haven't actually seen the product yet. So you're getting our true, honest opinion on what we think about it. And that's also going to drive potentially, is there going to be, you know, further collaboration between the two parties? Because if I don't like your product, I'm not going to want to keep using it, keep working with it. And so that becomes very important. And so I think, to me, the best way is provide the product and then maybe provide a bonus of some, if there's actual sales, but also understanding that the sales is really out of the control of the influencer. And I think that's been the biggest challenge of, you know, do you have the budget to provide basically these people, you know, hey, I'm going to give you a flat fee for creating content. I mean, that's one strategy, but I think that's been the biggest challenge for people, is that, you know, you want to see sales as the seller, and you want to see them as an influencer as well. But you also, it's like, hey, I could have made the greatest video ever about whatever product it is, but unless people see it, it doesn't matter. And that's, I think, the biggest challenge in this space right now.
Yeah. Yeah. I think
this is a controversial subject. So people have to see it, but they really have to buy it, right? I
Yes.
mean, otherwise, there is no point in doing anything. So to me, it's a little bit controversial, and there are two ideas about it. I want to see what your take is. So as you know, for a listing to be successful, there are several factors, of course, but I always say this: the success on Amazon comes down to two magic bullets. One is click-through rate. In other words, how do you maximize the number of people that are clicking on your listing to see the product? And the second is the conversion. So that's what it's about. So whatever you need to do, you need to try to increase both of those. But ultimately, Amazon will reward you for conversion. So, scenario one, you get a great influencer that drives you a lot of visitors, but only a small number end up buying. So, of course, there is also something called brand referral bonus, as I'm sure you are familiar with. So if you are bringing external traffic, Amazon rewards you by giving you 10% back, up to 10% back. But you have to use the attribution link. So the link that you would provide for the influencer would be specific to that particular influencer. And you will be able to then log into Seller Central and see exactly how much sales that particular influencer generated. And you can then make your deal, give percentage or whatever. But the danger is a small number buys, so therefore you take a huge hit on the conversion rate on that listing. So that's one scenario: attribution link and track the sales. The second idea is do not use the attribution link and instead have the influencer sign up as an affiliate and then let them drive through their affiliate link. So that way, because affiliate traffic is treated different, it doesn't affect your conversion metric, so to speak, that Amazon takes into account. So there you have isolated yourself from that danger, but at the same time, the earning of the affiliate is limited to what Amazon pays. So tell me your take on both of these scenarios.
Well, I think that if you have a good relationship with an influencer, the first one makes sense. And you're probably going to see they got a lot of content on your specific item. Otherwise, I think the other way works. They could provide you a report of like, hey, I sold X number of your product based on my content, and then you could reward them that way. We've tended to have it be the latter, where we're just using a our affiliate links as opposed to having a brand actually give us an attribution link. I think there's a little bit though with this new what they call creator connections process where they're giving more of those links, but it's really more of a campaign like, hey, we're going to spend for 30 days on this specific product. You've got to show us the content you've created, and then if we see the sales, you're going to get that. I'm not really sure how successful that's been overall for the sellers that are using that. But I think that kind of falls into that first one is where they're trying to encourage people to do that.
Okay, so what I'm hearing from you is go with the affiliate link and then have the influencer produce the statement and then reward them extra for the performance. And
Yes.
that way it's in their interest to do better and better. And then ultimately it's results oriented, which I always like, you pay for, it's the world of you eat what you kill, right? So if you
Right.
don't kill, you don't eat. It's very simple.
And
That's
I
it.
think you brought up a great point, Nick. And I think, in fairness to the seller, right, we don't want to do something that's going to, in a sense, punish them, because it kind of gets in that whole thing like, what's the difference? Somebody says that they can both market and sell. We usually say run away, because really the influencer is the marketer, right? They're not necessarily going to be able to get people to make that final buy. And you could even maybe make the argument that the Amazon platform in and of itself doesn't necessarily make people buy, because it might be that the price point is just too high. They love the product. They can't afford it, right? And so that could be the challenge of using the first method, you know, where, you know, hey, we're driving people, maybe eventually, right, it's on their wish list. Maybe eventually the price comes down and now they buy it. And so I think that's part of the challenge, because, you know, Amazon, you know, in fact, I think now they're even selling cars on Amazon. So they're all over the place as far as the prices. And so really, influencers are marketing your product. They're not selling your product.
Yeah, exactly. Okay. So this is a very valuable piece of information, because I'm always concerned about conversion rate performing, you know, underperforming, and that ultimately you always pay the price if your conversion is not so good. Okay, so the last piece of information that we want to get out of you is, what is the best way to support the influencers? Because the, you know, the relationship in terms of the interactions and everything that, you know, in everything, you know, in every relationship, communication is key. So what are some things that sellers should do in terms of managing their relationship with influencers and supporting them?
Yeah, so I know, like for us, you know, a couple of the companies that we work with, we have, you know, if not at a minimum, monthly emails. We'll even have like Zoom calls with them to discuss not only what's going on, but maybe what are some of the new products that they're going to be releasing. Give the influencers those products before they go out to the general public. I mean, obviously, you know, you probably want to have an NDA in place, right? Don't let them talk about it until you release it. But by allowing them, in a sense, to be the first to market from a content standpoint, that's going to help them potentially not only help you drive more conversions, but also get them more sales. I think also providing the products to them, don't expect them to buy them, I think can be another, you know, really good thing. And we've had a couple situations where, like, Shure provided us, they had it's called the White Noir microphone. It was a white MV7 that was only going to be sold on Amazon. And they provided that to us in advance. So the day it went, you know, live on Amazon, we were able to go live using that microphone. So that made us feel like, wow, they really like us. They're looking out for us. And on the flip side, we were getting to be those first people creating content for that specific product. So I think, you know, if you kind of take that in mind of like, make it more of a partnership as opposed to a transaction. And that will make not only the influencer want to continue to work with you, but will also, I think, get you better content in the long run.
Yeah, you know, this resonates with me in a way that I heard a long time ago. This is when I was working on building a company culture. So, you know, as you know, culture is huge. You know, in a company, they say that every company has a culture, and it's either by design or by default. Because if you don't have something by design, then you're going to have your team members making up things as they go along. And that's obviously never a good idea. So the point is, this gentleman said that, you know, one of the things that most companies overlook is when you hire consultants, because influencers are consultants at the end of the day, you're bringing them in and they're not on your payroll and they're going to help you for their expertise. And he said, include them as if they are team members, because usually they are excluded and they are on the outside. But when you include them in your company activities, I'm not talking about everything that you do, but keeping them in the loop and telling them what's going on with the company, treat them as if they are team members. And that will go a long way, making that influencer feel like they are part of a team. They are not just a hired hand, so to speak. And then as soon as they are done, they are out. So this ultimately falls back on communication. It's the frequency, the style, the content of your communication. So it's the relationship at the end of the day, right? They are doing what they are doing because they value the relationship. So what do you think about that approach?
I think that's right on the money. I mean, it is about teamwork, right? If, you know, because sometimes we come across things that you may, as the brand, not realize is happening, right? Whether it's, you know, hey, your listing's not showing the price you were saying it is on Amazon. We've noticed it because we're in there. You know, the product you said it was going to release, hey, it's not out there, or it's, you know, the ASIN is wrong. Things of that nature, or I mean, so it can be helpful to you because, you know, there's a lot of moving parts, especially in the, you know, the Amazon world. And so I think it's helpful to have that two-way communication, or to let people know, hey, this is going to be on sale. So maybe we're going to let that, you know, because guess what? Influencers sometimes have email lists. And so maybe they'll email out to their community like, hey, we've just been told that, you know, Company X is going to be having a sale on Amazon. Here's the dates. And that may drive more sales as well for the brand. So I think having that communication and not making, to your point, everything doesn't have to be everything. But I think also they may sometimes say, you know, hey, this is something that could be done to the product that would make it better, right? Maybe the next, they can help you with product development as well.
And I heard you mention regular meetings, right? So those meetings, they need to be serious meetings. In other words, there should be an agenda, there should be a transparency in performance and everything going on. So therefore they know that this is not just talk, that there is a specific way of handling this, and this is what we do. And then you tell them, usually my favorite philosophy is, if you're going to have a meeting with somebody or a presentation or anything, and I do that in this podcast, first you tell them what you're going to tell them, and then you tell them what you've just told them. So they know, you take no prisoners, so to speak. So they get exactly. So that way, because things happen in the process, they miss, and they know what they missed, so they can go back and check. So this is great conversation, Jim. Thank you so much for this. I like the episodes that we record to be actionable. People who listen to it right after, I say right after wrapping up listening to this episode, go take action immediately with what you've just heard, and your information could not be more actionable. It's great. Now brings us to the end of the business talk. Now I'm dying to hear your story. So tell me a little bit about yourself. Tell us, where did you grow up? I know you live in Georgia, right?
Yes.
So is that where you started?
No,
Grew up as a
I
kid?
actually I grew up in Northern Virginia, and you know, played you know, soccer and you know, through high school, and then went to Marine boot camp first right after high school. Went to Parris Island, got bit by all the sand fleas, and then I went to college at Old Dominion University and got my commission in the Marines that way. And then been all over the world, been to you know, Japan, Korea, the Middle East, you know, parts of Africa. So I couldn't be more thrilled with all the travel I've got to do. And then I've got you know, like you mentioned, I got grandson on the way. Love traveling with my wife, who we actually met in third grade in Catholic school, which is funny, but we reconnected through Facebook in about 2017. But I was in the Marines. I helped. I was in the logistics arena. I was part of the standup of what's called now the Marine Corps Forces Special Operations Command. So that was pretty fun and exciting stuff to be on the ground floor of that. And so I think all those experiences I had in the military, you know, and I was a business major as well in college. So I'd always wanted to have my own company. So it was kind of like once I retired, that gave me that opportunity to kind of do things, you know, my way, as opposed to always being told what to do, which I did for many years, as you can tell. And so I think seeing how, you know, business and the military, there's a lot of parallels. Things are constantly changing. You know, when we had the pandemic happen, as you and I both have seen, the rise of video, I think, was accelerated, right? Because now people are using things like Zoom to have meetings, where before they felt like they had to have a meeting in person. Mm-hmm. There's still lots of room for growth in the video world. When you look at the number of people creating content with video, it's still very low. And I think that's where sellers have an opportunity, you know, and that's what, and I just think people like to consume content through video now, right? They're all using their phones. And so that's where I have constantly been teaching myself, learning, right? I think that's the other thing, right? I'm a big believer in continuous learning, right? Once you stop learning, I think that's when you start to die. That's kind of my philosophy. So, you know, life is about constantly learning, constantly challenging, pushing ourselves. That's what drives me. My drive is to help others succeed. You know, in fact, my motto for my business, you know, in conjunction with my last name, was "Fired Up to Help You Succeed," Fuse. So that's one of those things that, you know, and I think that's from being an athlete, right? Being a coach, you want to see your players develop. You want to see, in the Marines, you want to see your people develop and become the best version of themselves. That's what I take the most pride in, is seeing others succeed, not, you know, what did I do? I think that's where maybe sometimes people think I'm weird, but I don't need accolades and awards. I've got enough of those. I want to see others do well.
Well, I don't think it's weird at all. I mean, look, there are two types of people in the world, and those who lead and those who follow. And you need both, because I heard one of the politicians say this. Someone who thinks he's a leader but has no followers is someone taking a walk all by himself. So you got to have followers, and people will follow you if you have something to offer. But also you have to be able to alternate, right? You have to know as a leader when to follow also. So this is not always, you are not siloed into one. You are changing from time to time, depending on circumstances. But at the end of the day, if you look at it, someone leading and people following, there is only one guy and so many followers. So does that make the leader weird? No. So that's why I don't consider it weird at all. But what I'm curious about you is this. So business is challenging itself. And being in the military and being in the Marines, challenging, obviously. So why did you feel that you had to get into these challenging situations? When did that start? When did you realize that this is who you wanted to be?
I think it was as a kid, you know, just from the time of maybe, you know, because I'm the oldest of four, is I always wanted to win, right? You know, I guess it's that whole Vince Lombardi, you know, winning isn't everything, it's the only thing. So I like winning. I like, you know, competition.
Why do you like winning?
Well, it feels better than losing. I think it just makes you feel good when you succeed, right? So I equate winning to success, right? And it's a good feeling. You know, if you do things right, do things well, everybody benefits, right? I think sometimes in business, what we want to look more at, and this was part of, you know, what I learned is in contracting, is why can't there be in business, why can't everybody win, right? Why does there always have to be a loser? So I think that's one of the things that I saw in the military, you know, dealing with defense contractors, is, you know, what's the situation we can do that not only is the military going to get a good product, the contractor is going to, you know, make a good return on their investment, but then even the taxpayer is being provided value, right? I think that's the thing we miss sometimes. Like, we feel like, oh, there's got to be, you know, somebody's got to suffer. And I don't believe that. I think that we have to look at things from a different lens. It's like, okay, well, how can we balance this all out? And so I think taking that into the business world, it's like, okay, how can I help other businesses succeed? Because they're providing a solution to other people's problems. So that's where they're helping those people, in a sense, win, right? And so if I help them, that, you know, it's kind of like everybody wins, right? That company remembers you for what you did to help them succeed. That customer at the end doesn't realize that all the things that have happened. I mean, even, and you know, so where the military and business too is, right? People need systems. People need processes. The military is big on that, because what happens is, and this is where I think businesses get challenged, is if you decided tomorrow, Nick, to walk out the door and say, I'm done with this business, you have two choices. You could sell the business to someone else, but do you have everything, you know, in a sense, the formulas for them to say, okay, I can step into Nick's role and continue to operate? Or is it that whole, well, Nick has it all up here in his head and he didn't share it with anybody, and now they don't know where to start? I think that's where some businesses get that challenge, is they don't document their processes. Because the reality is, that's what we do in the military. You get trained to take the next person up's job. And mm-hmm. and unfortunately, sometimes that's because of combat. But even as we rotate people, we rotate them into jobs of higher responsibility. And so that's, I think, what you have to think of in business is like, okay, as we step this company up, how do I leave something for that person that's just starting out? And then as we gain experience, how do we move these people up, and do we allow them to participate? So I think that's where I see a lot of those similarities. But I think, too, that's where veterans can bring a lot to the table, because they've already gone through that, you know, whether it's for, you know, 4 years or 20 plus years. That's where I think the military's helped me as a business person, because you also have to remember, right, it's business, it's not personal. And I think sometimes people take things personally when stuff is just, it's black and white, it's a decision based on what's best for. We used to say, I had a boss, our decisions are based on what's based on the mission and the Marine Corps. Notice I didn't say the person. Because I think we talked about this before. It's like, if I do something for you that's out of the norm, now I've created a problem in the future, because somebody say, well, hey, you did this for Nick and it didn't fit those other two criteria. Why won't you do it for me? So as hard as that can be sometimes, we have to make decisions that are based on what's best for the organization.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I totally agree. Standardization is big. I'm huge in terms of process. All my friends know that they call me the process guy. So, you know, I believe in documentation, and now training is much, much easier. You can have videos and screen recordings and things like that. So totally believe that. There is one thing that I want to give you my perspective on what you mentioned, business, not personal. I've been an entrepreneur pretty much most of my life. I only had, I say, 2.5 jobs, because the third job I had, we ended up taking over. So I always work for myself. And what I advocate is, for me, there is nothing that is only business. It's all personal. Because as an entrepreneur building a company, who you are is what you bring into your business. So my business is personal to me. Mm-hmm. It's not like I'm not going to think about certain things, because this is who I am and this is how my business operates. So therefore, when it comes to decision making, when it comes to things like company values and what I expect from team members, it's all personal to me, because I'm putting my whole life on the line to build something to make money. Money is a byproduct, but yes, this represents me. So that's why I tell people, there is nothing here that is not personal. It's Who I am is what you're going to get from the company. And so I take it a little bit personal, I guess, a little bit more than most, but that's my take. What do you think about that approach?
I think that makes a lot of sense. And from the perspective of, like you said, you're the brand, right? It's your business. And I think really, and maybe I misspoke a little bit, what I'm getting at is that sometimes people get upset about things that are truly, it's a business decision. It's a numbers decision. It doesn't mean, completely agree with you, that from the personal standpoint, the values and, you know, those sort of things are extremely important in building that company culture. But in as an example, in working for myself, as you do, I always find it interesting. As an example, I don't chase clients, right? That's not my culture. If you want to work with me, you'll connect with me. But I'm not going to get upset if you don't call me back. I just figure you got other things. You don't like my price. If you don't want to come back with a price, I'm a little bit, you know, I guess we'd say you could at least come back to me and say, you know, hey, we just can't afford it. Great. But don't treat us as like we're the, you know, the dollar store and you're going to get a deal because that doesn't help anybody. So I would agree with you from that perspective. And so I think, you know, my perspective is, right, we have to make decisions that are based on numbers and facts and not on fantasy.
Exactly. And also fairness is important, you know. So fairness is personal for me to have in the company, but how it should apply to anybody is never personal, because that's what the business has to maintain as who we are. And it cannot be different for different people. Like, I had this situation with one team member. You know, these days with remote team members, you are using time tracking all the time. So I had somebody come up to me and say, you know, I would really appreciate it if you could make an exception in my case, because I feel like I am being micromanaged, and I take pride in my work and blah, blah, blah. Can I not use time tracking? So my response was, the short answer is no. But what I suggest is change the perspective. Instead of being micromanaged, don't look at it that way, because I am tracking my own time, so I'm not micromanaging. So, and also there's transparency. The key here is that we have something that everybody respects and adheres to, and therefore we want it to be the same for everybody. And if you make an exception in one, and then you're going to have to make exception in others. And then also I said, you know, what happens when you have your time tracked? We can now go back and find better ways to do things in shorter amount of time. And maybe in some cases, we can bring automation that will help you become more productive. So it's the data that matters to us. It's not necessarily looking at what you've done and you know, why and why not. That's not the case. So in that sense, it's never personal, because this is our standard. Because as a company, we decided we want to be productive and we want to be fair and we want to get better and better. And this is just the way to do it.
That makes sense. I mean, even from the perspective, unless you're, you know, and I'm just throwing this out hypothetically, if the hours are 9 to 5, right, that's one thing. But it's like, look, as long as you get your hours in and we're tracking it, I don't care when you do it, as long as it gets done. You know, so I would agree with your mindset on the short answer there, because it makes perfect sense why you would want to do that. Because otherwise, how do you know, how can we help this person become more productive? Because I do believe, and I think you would as well, is people inherently want to do a good job. They just don't always get the training to allow them to get to that point.
Well, you know, I totally, you know, this is at a meeting. I don't remember now what was the subject, but the speaker said something. Einstein's biggest discovery was not the relativity theory. It was his finding that the universe is friendly. So he said, if you believe that universe is friendly, universe will be friendly because ultimately universe is friendly. That was his finding. So what that means is people ultimately want to do the right thing. And they don't want it that, of course, there's evil, but that's not the whole world. So to spoil the whole world because of the small minority, that shouldn't be our approach. And you expect something, and that's what you're gonna get, right? If you expect bad stuff, you're gonna get bad stuff. So people wanna do good and they wanna make a living, and ultimately they also wanna make progress in life because progress means better pay and they enjoy the work. So, this is always a philosophical discussion, but I can see that you are a philosophical person, which makes total sense. So, Jim, tell us, how can people reach you? Share with your contact information. We'll put this in your episode page together with the Facebook group. So tell us, how can people reach you?
LinkedIn is probably my favorite social network. Jim Fuse, you can find me out there. Or you can go to fusionmarketing.live, and that's got all the places that you can connect with me at.
Great. Thank you very much. It's a great conversation. And
Thank
I'm
you.
sure people will reach out. And thank you for being here.
Thank you, Nick.
Before you go, make sure to sign up with Aarti and claim your lost revenue. Visit www.getaarti.com/legends to register. You will get 1 month free and experience Aarti's features. Sign up now at www.getaarti.com/legends. Thank you, and this brings us to the end of another episode, and I'll see you in the next.
If you enjoyed today's episode, be sure to subscribe, rate, and review the episode, and share it with someone you think would benefit from it too.